This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Sunday Arts Magazine, Brendan Bale and David Hunt with you on this lovely Sunday afternoon.
Beautiful day again here in Melbourne.
It is.
Hello, Brendan.
Hello, David. Now, thank you so much for listening in, Joy listeners. And
yes.
If you are Sunday Arts Magazine loyalists, thank you so much for listening every week.
Yes.
I'll get this out of the way first. If you do want to have a chat with us about anything we're talking about today, you can SMS 0427JOY949 or you can email onair@joy.org.au. A big thank you to Andy and Steve as well for Three Girls and the Truth, of course.
Wonderful show, as always.
Now, we were just gabbing a little bit about something that you saw through the week.
But you had already spoken about it.
I reviewed it, I spoke about it, but I love talking about film with you. Mm-hmm. We don't get to talk about the same film a lot, do we, on the show?
No, we
don't. It's only just things that I've seen.
Yeah.
So, of course, the film I'm talking about is called Dior and I.
Yep.
About the fashion house Dior.
Yep. And their new designer. Who was about this new doco. Was what, about 4 years old?
The collection?
The collection when he first joined them was about... Because he's still with them. Haven't kicked him out or anything. He's still there. And the wonderful thing about this collection, just quickly, because we'll talk more about the art of it, is it was a bit of a throwback to Dior of the 50s and 60s with those beautiful dresses that he did wear. It had changed direction a fair bit in recent years. So he was taking it back to that original. And just... And you mentioned when you were talking about it as a review about this fabric that was a painting that he saw in an art gallery in Paris, and then he wanted it to be fabric for one of the dresses that he did. And he was adamant that they were going to do it, and they were saying, oh, no, we can't do it. There's too many colours, da-da-da-da-da. And anyway, they came up with the goods, and they were pretty excited about it when they did, the people that were trying to do it. But the art piece was very blurred and whatever.
Yeah.
And when it was actually fabric, I thought it looked a little bit tie-dye.
A little bit tie-dyed and a little bit sort of, it didn't really pop all that much to the naked eye watching the film anyway, from my perspective.
Yeah.
I think you agree with me, actually.
Yeah, but I think if he used different form of art where what he was trying to do was replicate what Dior had done, where it was vaguely out of focus flowers that he'd done it with many years before. And I love what he was trying to do.
Yes.
And the fact that he was using art, real art, as fabric, but I don't think he used the right sort of art. But then it's all in the eye of the beholder, and that's what art's all about.
It certainly is. Now, I don't know if we should talk about it. It gives a little bit of a way about what happens in the film, but the flowers used, let's just say,
for when the show was actually happening, because obviously that's what it was all about. He was the new designer for Dior and getting ready for the what they call
runway.
And they used this beautiful old mansion, a spectacular Paris mansion on different levels, but it was all on one floor, but all different rooms. So that's what the way they used to do it back in the 50s and 60s. It wasn't in warehouses and stuff. It was through different rooms. But they actually, there were flowers on the entire wall of each room, and each room had different flowers. And the smell would have been spectacular, as well as looking amazing.
It was the complete sort of, visual and sensory package, really.
I would have got all your senses going.
Yeah.
And me, suffering with my sinuses, my eyes would have been watering. But you put up with it, because it would have been been so spit. And then all the models walked up a staircase, this spectacular staircase, and then through all the different rooms. And the, his emotion at the end, I was actually moved by how overwhelmed, because he said, I'm not going to walk through because I'd be feeling sick if I walked through. But then he couldn't help himself in, and he even walked out in front of a few models as well, because obviously all the emotions came out, and that's the wonderful thing about when you're creating and your baby is actually born, in this instance, the runway, at it was pretty special.
That's it, and it's the same for any artist. Like, I'm not an artist myself, but I've spoken to enough. You know, that sort of angst before you let people see what you've created, because it's only in your mind until it's sort of released onto the world. I think just the emotion overcame him in that moment, and it got me as well.
Oh,
sure.
I was quite teary. I felt that emotion with him, and also being his very first a collection with Dior as well, having to prove himself. Interesting.
And for anyone that's into fashion, seeing Anna Wintour actually smile was quite a revelation. So I'll just put that out there.
Yeah, as she was escorted through all the rooms before anyone else saw it, of course, the privileges that she would have would be pretty amazing.
certainly. Well, I'm glad I think you liked it.
I did like it, but for money, just crazy stuff.
It is crazy ridiculous stuff. How much they sort of put out there. But I think they were running at a profit, so I guess they make their money back, but it is, some would argue, quite frivolous in the way that they spend money.
Oh, yes.
Gosh, it's nice. Now, another film I got to see, sticking with high culture, Leviathan, a Russian drama. Now, you know, it probably is a niche market for Russian dramas out there, but I'm sure our listeners, some of them would love a good Russian drama, David, don't you think?
Well, everything in Russia is a bit of a drama very moment anyway,
exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. And, well, it is very topical, the film. It was actually made sort of last year, and it was nominated for last year's Oscars, and it's a great film, very sort of slow moving, very deliberate use of direction and cinematography, but stunning sort of images of this Russian coastline, and
which would be quite dramatic, I should imagine.
Quite dramatic, and obviously the opening shot
is
these big waves crashing on these huge rocks on the coast, and very ominous.
Right. And is it a poor town? Like, you just always imagine, you know, that Moscow's not with those amazing buildings and whatever, but, you know, what's the tone of this town like?
I think that's why it's so poignant that it's set here, because it is this sort of clash between the well-off and the sort of, you know, the bombarded, the people that don't really have much power in the town, in Russia in general, I suppose. Yep. So it's kind of emblematic of what else is going on in the country. And, you know, you could argue that happens in every country, the powerful and rich versus, you know, the rest of us, essentially.
Although here in Australia, like Australia, you can, and the small guy can move forward. Well, you actually likened it to what?
The castle, which was the first thing that sort of jumped to my mind, because it's about this corrupt mayor wanting to take over this man's land. And, you know, he's attached to it. He's got a family there, and he loves where he lives, and doesn't want to leave, obviously.
Yeah. And the Russian people in those country towns would be very simple people, and they wouldn't want to uproot. So you've got to understand that too. And so, the storyline sounds quite interesting.
Yeah, and
but it wasn't a comedy like the castle.
It wasn't a comedy, but there were funny little moments that are scattered in, very, very dark, you know, black comedy tinges sort of scattered throughout. But overall, it was quite a serious film, and sort of saying a lot of serious things as well, and definitely a huge commentary on the country of Russia at the moment.
Was it?
Under the rule, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yes, thinly veiled sort of, analogy of Putin's Russia, basically.
Right, okay.
So, you know, but taken to the local level.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, gave it a lot more gravitas, rather than, it wasn't a political film as such, but definitely had those connections.
Yep.
Definitely. And it... as much as I sort of set up as a discussion about his house, it sort of delves into all these other things about sort of marital affairs, you know, just marital relations, having children, all these kind of things that I guess everyday Russians, everyday humans deal with on a daily basis. So, yeah, wonderful. Definitely an A film. I didn't love it as much as some critics out there, but I definitely thought it was fantastic.
Okay.
And, yeah, a bit of a longer film, nearly two and a half hours.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah, maybe know what you're in for before you go.
And what's it called again?
Leviathan. Now, I had to get the pronunciation correct. It's a lovely word, but had to get that right. So that was great.
Yep.
But I also got to see a film a little while ago. It's finally been released in cinemas now, X and Y.
Oh, it's getting rave reviews.
It is, yes, and it's wonderful. I won't go into too much detail, but it is about being on the autistic spectrum.
Yep.
Young Nathan struggles to connect with the people around him, especially and including his mother,
right,
unfortunately, because she is such a lovely character and he just can't quite connect with her.
Right.
They're speaking different languages. But
and it's a few years of him growing up, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah. Yes. He's piercing blue eyes.
Right.
They're sort of...
And so it's played by two people, isn't it?
Two different ones, yes.
Two
well,
boys,
and,
yeah.
And the main one is Asa Butterfield,
yep,
who's been in a few little, yep, well, not little, a couple of Hollywood films now. So he's doing very well for himself, and he plays the role excellently.
And this autistic boy, he's very good at spelling.
Mathematics is the thing.
That's right.
And, you know, they sort of talk about that in the film of, you know...
How that often happens.
That is,
yes,
sort of common.
Yeah.
So I think that was nice to sort of delve into that.
Yeah.
And, but,
and,
yeah, it
and
wasn't
where,
all
where
about.
Was it set?
This is in England, but he ends up going to the Mathematics Olympiad, I think it is, and they do training in China as
that's
well
right.
in an exchange
yep.
program.
Yeah.
So they do the training and then come back to England for the main championships.
And
but,
the
yeah.
school teacher is a lot of people are raving about how good he is too.
He's wonderful. Very sardonic sort of, yeah, sort of black humour that he comes out with, played by Rafe Spall.
And he's suffering a form of dementia, or no, not dementia,
no.
A Parkinson's disease.
Yes, yes, which
yes.
is obviously sort of taking over his body. And
and so you see him get worse as the boy gets older.
A little bit, yeah. Just he sort of deals with that on a daily basis as well. So, yeah, he plays that really well, Rafe. So performances alone are amazing. But if you do want a little bit more of an insight into you know, autism and people on the spectrum, yeah, go see it. It sort of opened my eyes even more than they had been.
Which is wonderful when films do that.
Exactly.
But it sounds like it's not just that barrow they're pushing.
No.
It's brilliantly acted. I'm just reading so many great reviews about it.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So I've been lucky again this week, David.
Good on you. Yes. It doesn't sound as if you ever see a bad film, or are you a very nice critic and you don't talk about the films
no,
you don't
I just
like?
Leave out the ones that I hate usually, yeah. unless I... yes, I'm nice.
Well, do you know what? I think that's a good way to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're on Joy 94.9 and you're on Sunday Arts Magazine.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine with David and Brendan. Hope you're enjoying yourselves out there, listeners. Now, we did hear from... Who was that, David? Who was singing those songs?
That was Gorillaz, and the track was Dirty Harry.
Yes. Now, I got a little bit confused. But anyway, we're not going to go into that. we were talking about they are potentially reforming, or at least Blur.
Blur are going to reform, which is pretty a unique thing because there was Bitter... fighting in the end with them, and one of the guys left, the bassist left first up, and then they recorded a couple of other albums, and then they totally broke up, and of course Gorilla was formed, but now I read only the other week that Blur's coming back as the original lineup.
That's incredible.
Yeah,
I love Gorillaz because they sort of blended, you know, art and music
in such an incredible way. And the fact is they used to play behind a screen with all the animation being up on the screen. So, yeah.
Incredible. Now, speaking of art,
yes.
What a segue.
Oh, God, you're clever.
I am, aren't I? Now, we have the lovely Melinda Martin, and she is the director of Linden New Art Gallery in St Kilda. So let's talk about that. Melinda, welcome firstly.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tell us a little bit about the gallery space that you're in and what do you guys focus on?
So the gallery is a Victorian house. It was built in the 1850s for the Michaelis family.
And stunning house.
Beautiful house. Oh. And they owned the house and it stayed in the family until about the 1950s. Then they sold it and it became what was called Linden Court, which was a hotel, private hotel, and a lot of post-World War migrants came and would stay for, you know, 6 weeks or so, and then they'd move on once they found a job as part of the story of St Kilda, I guess.
Yeah.
And then in the 1980s, it was threatened to be knocked down when they sold the owners wanted to sell the house at the time.
Because a lot of those mansions around that part of the world, because there's another beautiful one over across the road on the corner, yeah. A lot of them did get knocked down, didn't they? Because they were just let go. Because the money moved to the other side of town. Now, of course, everyone's moving back in. And St Kilda's becoming ridiculously expensive. And thank God, what happened next?
We're saved. So the council, what was St Kilda Council, stepped in and they purchased the building to turn it into a gallery space.
Yeah. Now, it's a beautiful... it's a terrace house, isn't it?
Yeah.
But a standalone terrace
with
the most beautiful lacework around.
Absolutely, and beautiful bay windows, and really quite unusual bay windows because they go to the full length of the floor. So a really grand Victorian dame, if you like. She's a really beautiful old building.
And the ground floor is the gallery.
And upstairs we have very glamorous offices with beautiful views. But, it is the ground floor is the gallery space.
Right.
And with the history, did you know much? You know, was art always a part of the building, do you know? Or
no, I don't think so. I think it was just the council at the time wanted to, because there were so many artists living in St Kilda at the time, they wanted to create a space that artists could come and show their work. So I think it was an opportunity that they took up, and we're very grateful. So we've been in the gallery for about 30 years now.
Right. Melinda, before we get into, because you're changing direction with the gallery, let's talk about your background. So
how did I end up as a gallery director? Yeah. I started off at university years ago, more years than I'd like to say out loud now, and I actually thought I would become a financial journalist. I was 17. It's a weird thing to want to be when you're 17. And So
you studied journalism?
No. Oh. I studied arts at Melbourne Uni.
Oh, okay.
And I then did criminology and fine art. And then I got to sort of honours, having done both, and said, what do I do now? And I fell in love with art. And then I went on and did my master's. And I did my master's about the representation of HIV and AIDS in American popular culture in the time.
Wow.
And then I went travelling, like most people. They finish university and go off. And I travelled, came back and started working in the arts on a range of jobs. So as a public program curator, started off as a volunteer like most people in the arts, and then have sort of gone on over many years working in commercial galleries, public galleries, and in some government agencies as well. And then about 3 years ago, someone said, you should apply for that job. And then I did, and I got it.
So you've actually changed the branding of the gallery. How long ago was that?
We only did that in February this year. So we've been working on it for about a year. We realised because we're such a historic building, often people don't know what's happening inside the building. So we wanted to make a kind of name change that would flag what was happening inside, because people often get intimidated by the grand architecture. So we decided, well, what we actually show is new art. It's work that's never been seen before. So it comes straight from the studio, from an artist, right into the gallery space. So we decided, let's put that in our name, and people can be really clear about it. It also gives people, I think, who don't know about the art world a chance to go, new art. Oh, I kind of get that. I might know what that might mean, rather than some long, difficult term that they might not understand.
And that sort of would go for audiences, but what about the artists themselves? Have you kind of headhunted certain artists, or are they sort of coming to you now?
Well, we're just changing our program. So what we're moving towards is actually doing solo artist shows with artists who've been out of art school for about 10 to 15 years. And we're at this stage going out to a range of people and asking, we've really admired your work. Are you interested in doing a show? Do you have time? What's your schedule like? And we're starting to build up a schedule up until about 2017 of artists who we want to show.
Oh, that's a great, great thing that you're doing. But we'll get into exactly the exhibition that's on now just in a few minutes. You're on Joy 94.9 and it's Sunday Arts with Brendan and David.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine. I'll repeat our SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email onair@joy.org.au to get in on the conversation if you want to have a chat. Now, speaking of chatting, we do have Melinda Martin, director of Linden New Art Gallery. She's stuck around in the studio, thankfully, David.
Thankfully.
Now, we want to talk about the new exhibition and the new direction of the gallery. So tell us a little bit about, you know, how this one particularly came together.
So this is the second time we've run the Linden Art Prize, and it was really about wanting to make and support a commitment to working with artists who've graduated from a postgraduate degree. So we ran it last year.
Yeah, in a way, sorry to interrupt you, but it's so important, one, for them to be able to have their art hung and to actually make some money out of it, because it must be very tough for a lot of artists out there, wouldn't it?
And that important transition between like being in university where you're really supported, you've got your own space to make work, and then you're out on your own. What do you do?
Yep.
So we really want to be in that space.
Yep.
So putting an exhibition on, having arts industry professionals come and select the winners means that they get their work shown to a really interesting group of people.
Now, how hard was it to pick how many are actually in the gallery?
So at the moment we have 8 artists on show.
Right, and there's four prizes. Right.
So fortunately, I don't have to be involved in that. I step out of that. And we had Kelly Galatley from the Ian Potter at Melbourne University and Karen Quinlan from Bendigo Art Gallery and an independent curator, David Hagger, who selected the artists. So they actually had to walk around and sort of discuss each artist's work and talk about them and then finally come up with the winner.
Right. And how many did you look at?
So we got about over 35 applications from across Victoria, and then they were shortlisted first down to a group of 8 because we couldn't show 30 artists work in our space, unfortunately. So it was selected down to 8, the sort of top 8, if you like.
And they're very good, aren't they?
We have some beautiful work, lots of painting, some video and photography as well as printmaking. So a really diverse exhibition and photography as well. So it's a beautiful show.
So people can go along now.
Yep.
Is there a people's choice voting as well? There's not?
We don't have a people's choice, but people are welcome to write a comment in our visitors book or talk to our staff and tell us what they loved, what they didn't love. We're really open to having those kind of conversations with people.
Now, this is the second one. Mm-hmm. When was the first one?
The first one was last year.
Okay, so it's now going to be an annual event?
It will be an annual event.
Right, okay. Fantastic. So it really does give those artists that opportunity to exhibit and to actually, as we said earlier, to win some money. But it's also really important to get the foot traffic through the door too.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? And as you say, that building, a lot of people do walk past it. I walk past it a lot. I live in St Kilda, and I don't walk in there as much as I should because you're always on a mission. And so many tourists are down there or people just down there for the weekend, and it's a nice thing to do, isn't it, to walk into this beautiful building and to see some really interesting art at the same time. And it's free. Yeah.
So, you know, you can come in, have a wander around, talk to the staff and learn something about new art.
Right. So what's next?
Our next show, we're doing 2 shows. One called Linden Projects, and it's artists who are exploring paper, and another show called Atmosphere, and there's a group of artists who are responding to climate change.
Right.
So 2 different shows that will sit along each other, and we're really excited about the kind of artists testing the boundaries and like creating different conversations in their artwork.
Right. How hard is it to come up with the next concept, the next idea? What's your panel?
So we have a board of about 10 business volunteers who work with us, but we have a small team of staff. We have essentially 3 full-time staff to run a program. We spend a lot of time talking, discussing. Our problem is not a lack of ideas. Our problem is a lack of people to make it all happen, like lots of small organisations.
Yeah.
So we just try and find things that are interesting that we've seen or that we've seen artists doing and ideas that they might be exploring that are kind of interesting. We think that actually will have a kind of context or relationship with our audience. So we're really always looking for new things.
So who owns the gallery, the council?
The council owns the building, and we are an independent incorporated association.
Right, okay. And your funding comes from?
Our funding comes from the City of Port Phillip, from Arts Victoria, and from a range of philanthropic supporters across the country, really. So we're very lucky. We're very fortunate.
Okay,
I was going to say, does that take the pressure off a little bit in terms of the direction that you go in then?
Well, we work pretty hard to ensure that we've got that balance right, and we're really lucky that we have a great board who help us do that. But it's always a challenge in a not-for-profit world to actually have enough money to do what we do. So we're always trying to find the best way to spend the money that we have.
Yeah, because it is difficult, because it is just from areas like that that you can you make money. Mm. It's not people's heads coming through the door, or there's not a gift shop at the exit through the gift shop. So do you ever look at selling stuff there as well?
So we have the annual Linden Postcard Show, which is probably the thing that the gallery is the most famous for, and that's a show that we actually sell from. So that's part of the prize. People enter it and the works have to be for sale. So last year I think we sold something like 560 works for artists across the country, which means we help them make a living from their practice as well. So in that show there's everything from hobby artists right up to, you know, senior professionals.
How can people get involved? Is there a volunteer basis, you know, for that front desk? Because when I came in the other week, the most lovely lady, and when I said I'd be interested in doing something here on Joy, she was so helpful, and within 5 minutes, you guys from upstairs were downstairs having a chat with me. And it must be rewarding. She must have felt, and I really made sure I thanked her when I left the building after I had a good look around after, because she would have been a volunteer, wouldn't she?
She's actually a paid member of staff.
Oh, yeah.
But we also have a team of volunteers who help with our openings, our public programs, and all those other sort of little jobs behind the scenes that makes a gallery look like it runs smoothly.
Right, okay.
So we do have a volunteer program. We also have an intern program as well. So people who might be studying can come and do an internship with us as well.
Right, fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you for visiting.
And what's the address again?
So we're at 26 Ackland Street in St Kilda in the residential strip.
Yeah, so it's away from where all the shops are, going back towards Fitzroy Street,
that's
isn't it?
Right.
Going up the hill a little bit. And it's a joy to walk along that part of Ackland Street anyway, because beautiful, just of all the magnificent architecture along there.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And before we let you go, we do have a message in from Eric about the gallery. Hi, David and Brendan. Just love Linden. Such an important part of the contemporary art scene in Melbourne. They show some amazing young artists.
Mm.
So thank you, Eric. And yeah, obviously you're doing something right.
And I think Eric might have been the winner of the first Linden Art Prize.
No.
Just quietly. No,
I know. No, he's not an artist.
Oh,
he
great.
Is a collector.
Mm. Fantastic.
Eric and his partner, Athol, are very, very big art collectors.
Well, we love them to come and visit more often.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you again.
Thank you for having me.
And you're on Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine with Brendan and David.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne, joy.org.au for the world.
You're on Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine. We're already into the second half.
Oh,
smashing
time flies.
Through it today. It really does. We're having a great chat today. Thanks again to Melinda Martin for coming in for a chat. But we're going to keep the conversation going. We've got the lovely Anna Kennedy coming in. She is a producer. Now, we'll get into what she produces in a little moment.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for coming in firstly.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you are a producer for Frisk, and we're going to be talking about a festival coming up. But let's talk about your background. You've recently graduated, is that correct?
Yeah, I recently graduated from BCA doing the theatre practice course there. So I was trained as an actor, theatre maker, and since graduating...
What do you mean, theatre maker? What does that
so,
mean?
So instead of just... I guess, interpreting text as traditional actors generally do. A theatre maker, I guess the difference is you create your own theatre works rather than working on someone else's text. You're making the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Shakespeare.
Yeah, you just improvise some scenes and you have basically a Shakespearean play. Yeah.
What kind of a difference does that give you from others then? Do you feel like you have a lot more power to wield?
Yeah, well, I definitely feel much more empowered now that I have training as someone who can work in a variety of facets in the theatre industry. Like, if I had have only done the acting training, I don't know if I personally would have had the confidence to pursue other avenues within the theatre industry. So I feel like it's really opened up opportunities for me.
Now, you've also, once you've finished with the VCA, mm-hmm. you then did a course at RMIT. Tell us about that.
So I've just finished the NEIS program at RMIT, and that's through the the federal government funds people to start their own businesses. So it's a 13-week training course, and then you have a mentor, and they basically help you start up your own business.
And yours was to be a producer of theatre?
Yeah, producing and performing.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. And how good was that and the opportunity? Because you really have to prove yourself to get into the course and then prove yourself along the way.
Yeah, well, I feel very, very lucky because I started doing producing kind of by accident, like earlier this year with a few collaborations that came up through being a recent graduate of VCA. And then I heard about the NEES program and I was able to basically be trained like as a business person to make my future career viable because, you know, as we all know, the arts industry can be quite hard to build a sustainable career. So,
and have you sort of seen the direct, you know, positivity coming out of that in your craft now?
Oh, absolutely. Even just in terms of my awareness of things like marketing and financial planning and management practices, scheduling, everything is just, for a producer particularly, it's so important to have those skills. And, you know, at VCA, your focus is performance. And you're not always thinking about the practical side of making a show. But I've been able to do all this research and now feel like quite confident that I'm getting to know my industry and thinking about it in terms of the longevity of my practice.
Well, I'm just sort of curious, in your studies, you know, at what point does it kind of turn the corner where they stop focusing purely on the art and the creativity and then focusing on the industry, I suppose?
Oh, well, I guess because we were trained as theatre makers, we've always been thinking about the end product and not just ourselves as performers. It's kind of like ourselves within the whole and what roles we can fill and what skills we may have that we can offer to the people we're working with. So I think in a way at VCA, it was always kind of about getting us used to the idea of going out there and creating opportunities for ourselves rather than just waiting by the phone to hear from an agent or someone offering you something. I think we've always sort of been trained to kind of think that way.
Now, tell us about this festival that you're part of. It's called True North Festival, and you're doing a... it's three plays?
Four.
And it's called Frisk?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So Frisk was a festival that we put on at VCA last year as part of Melbourne Fringe, so a sub-festival.
Right.
And Darabin Arts contacted the VCA and asked if some of the shows would be available to be part of True North Arts Festival this year.
Oh, so, how wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've been really grateful to work with them, and they've been so supportive. And yeah, and I kind of put my hand up to be the liaison between the graduates and Darabin Arts, and I kind of just ended up producing. Like, that's kind of what my job ended up being.
So when that happens, do you sort of then go back to the texts and, you know, do you look at them in a new light, or do you sort of just try and make changes that are just going to make it even better and better?
Back to the what, sorry?
Did you go back to the drawing board in terms of looking at the pieces?
Or did you just go with what was there?
Well, because I'm producing, I don't have really much of a creative role within those particular shows. So for me, it's more about facilitating their needs and communicating to the tech people on their behalf and vice versa, getting their promotional materials across to Darabin. So, yep.
So the shows... there's a director that's doing that, looking at the piece more.
Only one of the shows has an external director, co-director Tanya Dixon. But the other four, the other shows are all just self-directed, self-devised, and everyone's had quite a strong influence on the design elements and the scripting. Like when we were at VCA, obviously we had teachers there to sort of support and guide us. But yeah, the shows have had little changes since then, and a couple of them have been recast with other VCA students,
right,
due to availability clashes and things. But yeah. The shows are almost the same with a few new surprises.
Right. Tell us about some of them.
Some of the shows?
Yeah.
Well, there is I Still Call Australia Homo, which is a show about two heterosexual couples who are neighbours living in Australia if it was the worst place in the world to be gay. So it's very funny and cheeky and also has real heart. And another show is Godlike Status. That's a one-man show about the hardcore world of online gaming. So Crazy Moose 69 takes the audience in to watch him as he defeats his opponent Magnum Johnson. and Ophelia Soul, The Adventures of Ophelia Soul, is a one-woman show, and that's another immersive theatre piece, and she's the most fabulous, flamboyant marriage celebrant, and her show's about marriage equality and yeah, just equal love, I guess.
And I believe that the ceremony is performed to the audience.
Yeah, so the audience members are part of the ceremony.
Right.
They're all different members of the wedding party. And the final show is Notes from Zombieland, and that
Brendan,
is...
Brendan, you would like this one.
Yes, but I hear there's no actual zombies
Zombies. But it's kind of a mashup of the Mighty Boosh, Samuel Beckett, Dostoevsky, and the Teletubbies. And it's about an intergalactic traveller who comes to Earth to study the human condition. So he's hosted by four housemates.
Now, it's on for a couple of days,
yep.
17th to 19th of April.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all four plays performed in one night?
So on the first night, on the 17th, it's just the Adventures of Ophelia Soul and Godlike Status that are performing.
So do the audience sit through both?
You can buy individual tickets to all of the shows. So the two... Ophelia Soul and Godlike Status are both 20-minute shows.
Right.
And Notes from Zombieland and I Still Call Australia Homo are both 50-minute shows. So there are group packages available for $50 through the True North website. But if you are just in for, you know, want to come in for 20 minutes and see a show, or you want to stay for an hour or two,
yeah.
You can just book them individually.
Which is very reasonable price as well. Tell us a little bit more about the festival. How long has it been running?
So I think it's been running about 3 years.
Right, okay.
And it's in Preston, Reservoir and Thornbury.
Yep.
So in Darabin City area. And Darabin Arts funds this festival, and it's all sorts of art, live music, visual art, arts and crafts. There's bike tours, and there's a living statue garden party as well on the Sunday. So all sorts of different arts activities. A lot of them are free, and all of them are very reasonably priced.
But these shows in particular are going to be the Darabin Arts and Entertainment Centre.
Yeah.
So, and I hear they've been quite supportive as well.
Yeah, they've been fantastic.
What kind of a venue is it to, like, you know, does it sort of suit exactly what you're trying to create?
Does
it fit well? I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, it does actually. There's, because it's an entertainment centre, so it has the big auditorium. And it also has a few smaller rooms, and they've set up a marquee for Ophelia Soul outside, so it's like an outdoor wedding. And
awesome.
Yeah, so the auditorium's great because there's a particularly in Notes from Zombieland, there's a lot of special effects, a lot of flashing lights and loud music, and, yeah, it really helps them to create that world. And the same with I Still Call Australia Homo. It's really... beautiful and subtle lighting and more melodic soundtrack. So it's like having that technical support has been phenomenal, and the team at Darabin Arts and Entertainment Centre have been like so generous with their time and patience. Yeah.
And isn't it so important that a council put – it's really good to do it because that's what their mandate is for their community, but it's also important for people like you and your group that's the directors – well, they're self-directed, but the actors and whatever – to actually have this opportunity. It must be, you know, it must be very exciting for you to actually have this opportunity to work on it.
Absolutely. It's well, I'm a massive advocate for the importance of arts in Melbourne and in particular, like in Australia, just the supporting artists and giving artists opportunity to share their work and to, I guess, reflect on, you know, where we are in history and in the world. And
yeah,
I think it's very, very important. And I'm so glad that we had this opportunity.
And on a personal level, what sort of avenues does it open up for you in the industry then?
Well, as this is only the second project that I've produced, I'm working with my peers from BCA. It's been a really good, safe and supportive learning environment for me. So I guess I'm surrounded by all this support and I'm able to really gain a lot of confidence as someone who's new to producing. And it's really nice to feel like arts in Melbourne are thriving and that there are these sorts of opportunities coming up all of the time.
I also believe that the profits from it actually go back to the collective, is
yeah,
that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Which is a wonderful thing, apart from all this experience, and
yes.
You don't have to put your hand in your pocket for it all. You could make money out of it if you get bums on seats.
Absolutely.
So it's obviously very important that we as a community go out there and support it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's just such a fantastic program. Like, I can't even explain how much I love these shows, and I just want people to see them. Like, we would put our hands into our own pockets if we needed to get these shows up, because they're just such good quality and we really want to share them with audiences. So the fact that, especially now as emerging artists, it's really difficult to support yourself through your passion.
Yep.
But to have this opportunity, and hopefully we can, you know, have that sort of support for our next projects. And yeah, it's an excellent position for us to be in, and we're very grateful.
And if you want to get more information about the festival, truenorthfestival.com.au. We can't thank you enough, Anna Kennedy, for coming in and having a chat.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's been lovely.
And all the best for the future. We can't wait for you to come back in the next couple of years and when you're producing huge events. This one's about you, Brendan. The song's called I've Been a Bad, Bad Boy. You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
It's Sunday Arts Magazine. Nearly time for us to say goodbye.
It is.
But I hope you've had a great day listening out there.
And a great day out in this beautiful sunshine.
Yeah, the sunshine's hanging on for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
I don't know how long we can. But make sure you do keep listening for Robin Mossy Yesterday once more.
Yes, straight after
the news.
Yep.
And the wonderful Basim's going to take the news for us today.
Yep.
Now, I'm going to talk about a film next week, David.
Mm-hmm.
You probably haven't heard of it yet, but it's called It Follows, and it's creating quite the groundswell. It's this new indie horror film
right.
that's come out. Wasn't supposed to be released in Australia at all, but it's just riding this social media wave of discussion, and people are calling it the best horror film of the decade.
Wow.
And so I went and saw it the other night.
Right.
And with a big crowd, which is really important. It doesn't happen very often with horror because, well, horror doesn't do very well in Australia usually.
Yeah.
But it was great, this media preview of it had a great crowd, and we're all sort of gasping and really we're right there in the emotion. So I thought it was wonderful.
Now, what's your thought on the crackdown with the film companies now with all the piracy? What's your feelings? Because do you watch films online?
No comment, but I just think it's kind of crazy. I don't want to get too political, but, they're going to be potentially bringing in a new Netflix tax, as they're calling it. So I think that's going to drive more people, that might have been thinking about switching to Netflix and doing things the legal way, might turn them off that as well if the prices of that go up as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I feel Netflix and, things like that, there's a number of ones out at the moment. They're all reasonably priced, so I think you can fit that into a budget, but I think once it gets out of reach, I think that's when it causes problems. So we'll see what happens. It's really
it's a very interesting time, and I totally understand why people are doing it, but you just can't work it out sometimes, can you?
Yeah. It'd be lovely if we had access to all the films and all the TV shows that are out in the world, whether it be US or whatever it may be.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.